This week, Industry Super Australia launched the third instalment of the Compare the Pair superannuation ads, where they claim that industry super funds achieve consistently better results than retail funds. It was their ad from earlier this year that really ramped up the war of the super funds, where they compared super funds controlled by banks to foxes about to enter the hen house with the help of politicians. It was an extremely blunt depiction that crossed my television screen last Sunday night, as it might have yours. Here's a reminder.
Thank you. Now go to sleep.
The big banks want to get their hands on your super. And they're putting pressure on our federal politicians to let them in. Banks aren't super.
That gives you a sense of the stakes in this contest for your money and understanding. But could the whole industry, retail and super funds, and perhaps the government, be focusing on the wrong side of the question, on the accumulation rather than the post-work or the so-called pension stage? Right now, most estimates say the majority of workers won't have enough money to comfortably live out their retirement based on their saved funds, and they'll need to resort to a government pension despite all those lofty hopes. Currently, we're awaiting Kelly O'Dwyer, the Minister for Revenue and Financial Services, to deliver on reforms around this issue, on the My Retirement part of the whole question, on which she acknowledges vested interests are at play, but that the government is onto it. And the Productivity Commission has also begun a review. So what should be the focus of attention? Might part of it be a decent public education campaign like we've had around health issues, for instance, to alert more of us to know and protect ourselves by small steps? I think this is just one of the ideas brought by Patricia Patskuso, who is joining me now. She's interested in this realm of Australian life and also is the founder and executive director of the Committee for Sustainable Retirement Incomes. It's a non-profit and non-partisan think tank. Welcome, Patricia.
Pleasure to be here.
That ad is really remarkably blunt. I mean, we don't actually do that in Australia to quite that extent. How would you characterise it? Like, why is that level of emotion being engendered at the moment?
At what level you could look at that and say it's really a battle of philosophy, and that philosophy being, you know, whether not-for-profit funds are superior and whether for-profit or bank-owned superannuation funds ought to be providing superannuation. That's at one level. But at another level, it simply reflects that we are talking about very big business. We are talking about control over the ownership of the default funds, which is quite a lucrative business.
And I think you say this is why really you founded your company, because you just didn't think that policy was being talked about.
Well, exactly. The concern was that because it has become such a big business, it's the fourth biggest pension fund in the world, even though it doesn't actually provide pensions. And because of that, then the concern was that the interest of the member and the interest of the community tends to be lost. And there has tended to be a focus. It's tended to become really reactive. And what I'm trying to bring, what I'm trying to be a catalyst for, and why I set up the CSRI was to encourage a much longer term perspective, sort of standing back and saying, is the system delivering what the system was intended to deliver? And is it doing, creating the best outcomes for members?
Yeah, I noticed that Jeremy Cooper, who conducted that big review of superannuation in 2009 and 10, he wrote relatively recently, where are the wise and respected leaders of the super industry on these important retirement income gains? The real stumbling block is a lack of broad industry leadership. Do you agree?
I couldn't agree more with those sentiments. And really, there is the industry does need to step up to the plate. You know, there is so much. The superannuation isn't like the market for groceries or the market for mobile phones. Members are conscripted, and therefore it operates in a different way, and we can't just...
Because we have to contribute to compulsory super.
Because we have to, exactly. And so because it's an industry that's been born of regulation, and unfortunately it's become dependent and reliant on regulation to guide its future, I think there is so much more that the industry could do if it came together, if it could sort of put aside the battle and collaborate to address some of the issues that you've already mentioned, including the need to, you know, educate, not so much educate, but better inform people, well, to simplify the system.
But somebody said, and I can't find the reference, but I read recently that, like, we had slip, slop, slap, you know, to educate people about the sun. You know, we have a range of things around public health. And yet here is this issue that most of us sort of say, who looks at their super, details until they're sort of 60 or whatever, and everyone just leaves it at that. So in a sense, if we are to have a genuine debate about the post-accumulation phase, who's going to lead it? Where is it going to come from? Is it going to have to be government, is it?
There's certainly a role for government. There's certainly a role for industry, and there's a role for organisations like myself. And I think even though people don't look at their super balances, I think there is a lot more interest, particularly, as you say, as they come towards retirement. It's not so much that they're disinterested, really, the issue. It's just so complicated. And that's where a public information, a public awareness program is really critical. At the moment, we've had a system that's been built for accumulation. For 25 years, the focus has really been gathering the funds, putting the money in, growing them. And there's been very little attention given to, well, what happens then? What happens when people actually retire?
Yes. Now, see, I think that people would say, well, you've got it there. You either take a lump sum or you take some sort of ongoing annuity of some sort. And so what's the discussion? But in fact, as I understand it, inside the industry, there's a great deal, and the government, you say, is working slowly on this, on this CIPR, Comprehensive Income Product for Retirement, and that this is the new area of discussion and debate. Tell us why this matters.
In the accumulation phase, where, as I said, a lot of attention, there is a default there for those who can't make a choice. There is a default, and that helps people. It's sort of a safety investment option. But then, by the time they get to retirement, suddenly they're all on their own. it's totally up to them to decide what to do. And the issues are really, really difficult, because not only do you have to think about how to invest it to manage your inflation risk and risk of equity market risk, but you also have to know how much you can draw down to ensure that you don't run out of savings, you know, before you, you know, move to the other life.
And is there no real advice that comes from the super funds?
And so there, people can access advice, but unfortunately, people don't necessarily trust advice. They don't necessarily seek out advice, because they think that advice is only something for rich people. So there needs to be something more. There needs to be more structure for the majority of people who really don't know what to do and who aren't going to seek advice. And that's where some form of, you know, partly it's about creating some form of a soft default where people opt in, and it's guided to them by their trustee. But there also needs to be more development in the products that are available, because, while in theory people can buy an annuity, they tend not to, because, annuities are something which kind of need to be explained and, you know, for people to be comfortable.
Well, this is all new, I suppose. I mean, I read also that a lot of superannuation companies really don't know who their customers are at all. They're not. This hasn't been an area of development. They feel they've done their best by getting decent returns and in this business of build up. Do you think that's so? And is this a whole new challenge for the superannuation industry?
It is a whole new challenge, you know, the focus tends to be on you know, the accumulation phase, you know, they do need to really spend more time thinking about the long term, you know, thinking about the future. There's more and more baby boomers entering retirement, and they're going to be entering, you know, in droves. And there needs to be more consideration given to what sort of solutions are we going to offer them, you know, to, you know, that meet their needs. The needs in retirement are much more particular to the individual than they are in accumulation.
And see, there's no regulation saying each fund has to provide these CIPRs, are there? So there's no incentives for them to do that, really, because people don't seem to shop around with their super, so they stay put. So, you know, I can't see quite where the spur is going to come from to change, to make tailor things to individual needs.
And that's where regulation comes in, and that's where the government is looking to create a regulatory framework. I think at a very minimum, the first thing the government needs to do is make it quite clear that each fund needs to have a strategy, for how they're going to meet the retirement benefit needs of their members. So that's kind of like a minimum. That's to get, you know, get them start thinking, start planning. But then over time, there ought to be a requirement to offer a SIPA. So that's where the debate is all around, you know, what is a SIPA? What does it look like? And I guess the key thing about a SIPA is that it's a comprehensive income product in retirement, which means it tries to address all the risks that individuals face in retirement, including and importantly, longevity risk.
Now, one thing you're advocating is having a holistic look at our post-working period, that we shouldn't be just looking at super in isolation, but in combination with the aged pension, with, say, housing, where a lot of people have their wealth, to consider all the components of the retirement income system together. Can you simplify that for me, please?
Well, essentially, these issues tend to be looked at in silos. You know, so we look at superannuation, and then we look at the, you know, the aged pension separately, and we look at aged care separately, and, you know, and then housing is like, you know, too hard a basket, really. But the reality is that people won't have enough superannuation, you know, to live on in retirement on its own, you know, to maintain, you know, their standard of living. So they will need to, be continually reliant on the aged pension. You know, at the moment, 80% of people still rely on the aged pension in retirement, and that's not going to drop dramatically. Because of that adequacy gap, housing is another asset that people own with a lot of equity. Well, the majority of people own at this stage, and that also needs to be tapped into to meet the needs of retirement, including for aged care. So we're not seeing that debate and discussion about how these different areas of policy are interlinked, and that's
what we need. Well, lucky Kelly O'Dwyer having that on her desk. Patricia, thank you very much indeed.
My pleasure.
Patricia Patskouso, who's founder and executive director of the Committee for Sustainable Retirement Incomes. Our text line is 0418 226 576 if you care to leave your thoughts or offer your thoughts, because obviously this is a debate, complicated but really vital, that I think we probably do have to have. So I do invite you to leave your thoughts. Stay with us here, though, on Saturday Extra for what's behind the sacking of Steve Bannon, the man who was apparently the mastermind of the Trump election campaign.